This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and boy, do we have a special guest today. Yes, the one and only Shirley Jones. What do you say about an actress like her? Her new book is just called Shirley Jones, a memoir. It's written with Wendy Lee, I should say that. Hello, how are you?
I'm just fine, David. How are you?
I'm stunned to be talking to you. I can't believe I'm actually talking to you.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
I mean, as a child of the 70s, you know, I can remember the Partridge Family like it was yesterday. I mean,
of course.
And all the songs just go right through my mind. As soon as I think of you, I think of that show and all the things you've done.
I know. That's your age group.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm just so glad that you're happy today.
Oh, I am. I am. I'm almost 80, and, you know, somebody said, why did you want to write a book? I said, when am I going to do it if I don't do it now?
It's a very, very honest book, and you are shocked when you read it. Wow, she's really being totally honest. There's like
some people say, why would you want to do that? I said, you know, I wouldn't have done it, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, but, you know, the fact that I am going to be 80 next year, and, you know, there's people know me in one area of my life, and why not know me in the other area of my life?
Every time we see you, you have a smile on your face. Are you always like that?
You know, I'm a very happy person, David. I really am. I mean, you know, even writing the book, which was a lot of tragedy, you know, that happened to me with my first husband and that kind of thing. But, you know, that's life. And I've always felt that, you know, you have to take tragedy with happiness. And that's the way I feel. I feel very, very blessed. I do. I think that I've had a wonderful career. I have 3 incredible sons and 12 grandchildren. I'm an only child. And 2 incredible husbands. So, I mean, I have nothing to bellyache about.
The thing is, and this book's out from Gallery. I should mention Gallery is the publisher. And there's so many stories in this book that I hate to bring any of them up because I don't want people to be spoiled before they read the book because it's such an interesting book.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way. You know, I wasn't sure, you know, when I read it and it was finished, I thought, what have I done? I thought that first. But then, you know, so far, I've gotten people have said, yeah, that they really are pleased to have read it, and it's nice to see another side of my life, too.
I mean, when I think of Jack Cassidy, I mean, I think, why was he like that to her? You know, that's the first thing that goes to my mind. Why would he treat her like that? Why? She's such a sweet lady. What would possess? And I feel anger when I'm reading this book. I can't help but feel anger.
He was sick. I mean, he was bipolar, and that didn't come out until later on, you know, the real sickness that happened. I mean, it was tragedy, real tragedy. And the fact that he, you know, he was the most talented person probably I ever worked with and was with. I mean, he was talented in every way. And I admired him so tremendously, you know, in not just his looks and his talent, but as a person. He taught me everything. I mean, I was a little kid. I was, you know, I was 21 when I married him. And, you know, I learned a lot from Jack, an awful lot. About life in general, you know.
You were warned about him before you met him that he was very.
By everybody. Mm-hmm.
So why did you not take that heed? Why did you? I mean, did you just fall instantly in love with him?
Yeah, I did. That's really what happened. I mean, I was warned by everybody, and you know, he was married when I met him, but he was so charming and so delightful in every area. And religious in his own way. You know, he was raised a Catholic. And, you know, he had, for me, a small town girl, population 800, Smithton, Pennsylvania.
Right.
I mean, I never met a man like him.
He was just one in a million for you, obviously.
Yeah, he was. Absolutely was. You know, and I say it. You know, I say it now, you know, Chris, my husband Marty said, what about me?
That's right, exactly. Marty sounds like somebody I'd love to know. I mean,
he's fantastic.
He's so unpredictable. I think that's probably what you love about him.
Well, listen, David, you know, everybody says, forget those 2 men you married. You're the crazy one. And I think they're right.
But I mean, when I'm reading about him in the book, I think, oh my gosh, you never know what this man's going to say, who he's going to say it to.
That's right.
And people don't always know how to take people like that.
Oh, I know. We've had problems because of that, obviously. But Marty keeps me laughing 24 hours a day. I mean, he's just, I've often said I never could have married, the straight 9-to-5 guy. I just couldn't. I mean,
It wasn't who you are.
No. I was a rebel as a child, I was a rebel until I was 9, 10 years old, and then I said, this is not working for me. I better turn it around a little bit.
Yeah, your mom was really tough on you.
Yeah, very tough on
me. Do you think that was good for you in the end?
Probably. I think it was. I mean, I established a real sense of what to do in life and how to behave in life and all that kind of stuff. So it gave me that. But, this is funny because it just dawned on me just recently. As I said, I was a real, real rebel. I mean, I went out and fought with boys and came home with my clothes torn and all of that until I was about 9 and talked to my dog and he said, don't do this anymore. I said I wouldn't. But you know something? And then my whole lifetime, show business and doing what I did and marrying two rather crazy men. And now at the age I am now, I'm a rebel again.
It was so nice to see you on Hot in Cleveland and the live show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
What a sweet...
Wasn't that a funny scene?
And the whole thing was funny with William Shatner. And William Shatner comes out. Like, who else is going to show up in the show?
I know.
Had you known Betty White? You had known Betty White before
forever,
that.
Forever, absolutely, yeah. Her husband was the host on Password forever.
Right.
And Jack and I did Password at least 2 or 3 times. And
oh, really?
And we had dinner with the two of them, several times. So I love Betty. I've known her forever.
You didn't do a lot of game shows. I don't remember seeing you on a lot of them, but you must
have. No, I did that, and I did the other one where we were in the square, Hollywood Squares.
Hollywood Squares, yes.
I did that about 4 or 5 times.
That must have been fun. That looked like
a
fun
show. That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun to do.
A lot of fun. You've had a lot of fun in your life. Now, is musicals what you enjoy more than anything? Do you love singing more than anything?
Well, singing was given to me. It was a gift, I mean... I thought everybody could sing, I grew up singing. I mean, I was the youngest member of the church choir at age 6.
Wow.
And so I thought, well, this is what everybody does. I didn't realize that it was such a gift that was given to me. So, yes, I love singing. But, the thing that I wanted to do also was become an actress. And had Elmer Gantry not happened, I would not have had the career I've had. Because being a singer, if you're a singer, they don't think of you as an actress.
You won an Academy Award. I mean, I'm talking to an Academy Award-winning actress. I have to tell myself that a couple times to really believe it.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful. It gave me the career that I have.
Would you have won the Oscar without Burt Lancaster?
No. I wouldn't have had the part without Burt Lancaster. Because the director-writer, Richard Brooks, didn't want me at all. He had somebody else in mind. But Burt was co-producing the film with Richard Brooks, and he saw me do a Playhouse 90, which was, live television then, with Red Skelton, and he loved me in that show. And that's what convinced Burt, and he fought for me. I mean, he got me the part, because Brooks didn't want me even after I got it. the first scene I had to do, because I didn't, Richard Brooks shot in sequence, so I didn't come in the film till the middle of the film, and the first scene I had to do was the heavy-duty scene in the House of Prostitution, talking to the women, telling how I met Elmer Gantry.
Right.
And he didn't give me one direction. He just sat in his chair. And I thought, oh, I'm finished after this. And the next day, he had seen what I had done, and he called me, and he said, Shirley, I owe you an apology. Not only are you going to be great in this film, but I predict you're going to win an Academy Award.
That is amazing.
He was my best friend. I went on to do another film with him.
Sometimes it just takes patience for things to happen. Sometimes, if you try to force things, if you'd yell back at him, you may have been fired right then on the spot.
Exactly. No, I never did. I mean, I was always one... Speaking of patience, I was always one that had, whether I was born with that or not, but a great deal of patience.
Are you a forgiving person?
Yes, I am, very. Mm-hmm.
You had to be with Jack. I mean, my God.
Oh, yeah, very. I mean, you know, Marty says to me, I don't know how you do this, because he has a hard time with it. He has to, he said, I want an apology from that person. I said, why? He made a mistake.
Yeah, see, I'm more of a Marty kind of thing. I feel the same way myself, and maybe that's what a lot of people would feel. But you, I mean, you put up with so much. I mean, you had a lot of men in your life who didn't treat you very well.
Yeah, well, only him, really. But the treatment was, see, what I always felt about you know, Jack was, you know, I chose him. He didn't choose me. I chose him. And so I was the one that, you know, wanted to be with him and would tolerate most anything, you know. I mean, not anything, but obviously, but I mean a lot of stuff, because I learned from him.
Right.
And, you know, and he... He left his wife for me, you know, and had a son called David. And, you know, it was hard on David. It was very difficult. I mean, you know, Jack knew what he was doing, and I didn't demand it in any way, but he did it.
Right. I was referring more to the actors that you worked with. Some of them didn't treat you
all
that great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but you were such a trooper through everything. I mean, it amazes me, your patience and your forgiveness. I mean, and you didn't always get along with the fellow actors. And,
well, there wasn't anybody that I didn't get along with. I mean, Brando was, fortunately for him, he was doing comedy, and he was happy doing that, because nobody would give him the opportunity to play comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was very happy with the movie, with the part he had. And working with David Niven was a joy, you know. He adored David, as I did, because, you know, after we finished the scene, David would sit down and tell us stories about his life, and it was hysterical. I mean, so it was a very pleasant situation that I had with Brando.
Were there any stories that you couldn't put in the book? Was there anything that happened that you knew you could never put in the book?
Not really. I think I said everything.
Really? Everything?
Yeah, I think I did say everything. I mean, I never had a real bad experience with any of the movie stars that I worked with. I really didn't. First of all, David, it was a different time in Hollywood, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't what it is today, where everybody wants to be a star and get out there and do their thing. What we had then, which I found wonderful, and, you know, I wish we had more of that now, is that everybody worked for the piece, for the story, and they worked together, you know, to make it a hit movie. And today, everybody wants to be a star. They want to do their own thing.
Right.
And I think it's more that way today than it ever was then. Jimmy Stewart was a dream to work with. I did two films with him. And, you know, he was from a small town, too, in Indiana, Pennsylvania. And we got along very well. And Henry Fonda, I did two films with him.
Right.
You know, so...
Quiet guy, though. Very quiet, Henry Fonda. I didn't realize he...
Henry wasn't easy to be around because he never talked. You know, he was...
I wonder why that was.
I don't know what it was. I used to go to the makeup in the morning. He'd be sitting there. Hi, we called him Hank. Hi, Hank. Wouldn't even turn around. Hello. And never, you know, wouldn't talk about anything. I think he was one of those actors that wanted to be left alone if he was working, you know.
Oh, I see. He was in the moment, and he didn't want to be disturbed.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
You hear a lot about that today, where actors stay in the role even when they're not doing the film.
Absolutely. Sure.
I understand that.
I mean, I see why they do it, you know. And, you know, a few times I used to have to do that, too. You know, it was hard for me to break out. But so I do understand that.
What was it like to film Oklahoma? I mean, when you're putting your first this huge movie, right? I mean, you must have felt a lot of nerves.
Oh, I didn't. I was so young, basically, and so naive. I thought, well, I guess this is what people do. I guess everybody does this. But you know, we shot in Nogales, Arizona. It was my first movie, first doing anything. Forget movie. I mean, I'd already been on Broadway, but in the chorus of South Pacific. And I'd done another show for Rogers. I was under contract to Rogers and Hammerstein. I was the only person ever put under contract to the two of them.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And you know, we were in Nogales, Arizona. They built the house, the smokehouse, planted the corn. Everything was there. It was all real. And this is before, you know, the everybody came in and said, you can't work actors, you know, that way. It was 15-hour days, 7 days a week.
Wow.
And we worked around the clock.
That's tough. And you had to know your lines.
In my first film, and I thought, do I really want to do this? job.
It, when you see these actors today, you think, oh, they have it easy. They make so much money. And
that's right.
Things are just thrown at them. You don't realize how hard they really work.
So, oh, wow.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
You can't survive if you don't work. I mean, you worked on a soap opera. You won Days of Our Lives.
That's right. Exactly. And so, I know. And I was a nervous wreck about the lines, you know, all the lines I had to learn.
Have you ever had trouble memorizing lines?
I do now. I never have before. I do now. I have to work at it now a lot. When I did Days of Our Lives, before I even started, you know, filming, I had a young man who was a young actor come over to the house a week before, and I worked the lines with him.
That's neat.
Even before I went to work.
Now, how long were you on Days of Our Lives?
I think it was 5 days.
Just 5 days?
Yeah.
But that's an experience. I mean,
giant experience
for me, and that's the point with you. You've done a lot of different things. I mean, you've done commercials, TV, movies. Is there anything you haven't done?
No, I don't. Not that I know of. I've never done a Broadway play. But not on Broadway. Jack and I did Wait Until Dark, the tour of Wait Until Dark, and I played the blind.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it's great.
Audrey Hepburn. I still think of her in that movie, and
I know. It was a great part for me. I mean, I went to the School for the Blind here in New York for 2 weeks before we started the rehearsals and learned how to be blind.
Now, are you a big reader?
No. I have to be honest, I'm not. I love biographies. I love horror stories, horror books.
Horror, interesting.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
That's what's wonderful about your show. There's so many facets to you. I mean, people look at you and think, oh, she looks like the everyday
mother. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what they're going to find in the book, that I'm not that,
People are going to be, like, horrified. I mean, this is a book where people are going to call their friends and say, have you read this book yet?
I know.
It's amazing. I mean, can you imagine what she talks about in this one?
I know. That's the thing. It was a big concern for me, and, of course, my kids, too. You know, I have 3 grown men now and I have 12 grandchildren. And, you know, Sean called me this morning, my oldest son. He said, Mom, how's it going? I said, believe it or not, Sean, it's okay. So far, it's okay. He said, is it? And I said, yeah. I said, it's so far, everybody's been very nice and very, you know, accommodating and seemed to like the book. And he said, well, I'm glad to hear that, you know.
And you were worried that whether the people wouldn't. I mean, it's such a fun book to read. Can you be too honest? Maybe you can, but I don't think this is too honest. I think it's just
I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's just very refreshing, because sometimes you read autobiographies and you think, oh, this is so dull. I mean, it just doesn't mesh.
Yeah. I mean, I know. Well, you know, as I said, if I'm ever going to do it, you know, I don't have probably a lot of time left, so I better do it now. And I wanted people to know what my true life was all about. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, a Cinderella time. I mean, yes, getting a star in Oklahoma was, but then, you know, from then on, it was a real, real life. And I have no regrets whatsoever. I really don't. I mean, I probably would have married Jack again.
Yeah. Has Marty made you open up more? I mean, has he made
you? Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I probably, and Marty knows this too, I mean, if Jack had lived, I probably never would have gone back to him, but I'm not sure I would have married again, to tell you the truth. And Marty knows that too, you know. But the fact that you know, when I married Marty, I said, I'm not going to cook for anyone, and I'm not going to die for anyone, so you better understand that.
Good for you.
and, you know, the good thing about Marty for me was I could do or say anything, which I couldn't really do, you know, with Jack, or I didn't want to do with Jack. But with Marty, I was the real me, in other words, you know. And we're married 35 years, and it's been wonderful.
That whole Pac-Man story in the book is fabulous. I was laughing out loud reading that. I thought, oh, my God, who would have even thought that he would be, you know? And that's the thing. I don't want to talk too much about the stories because they're so precious that I want people to enjoy them for the first time. And I want them to say, oh, I already knew that because I heard him in the interview. But I mean, there's so many wonderful stories. I mean, I'll never think the same way about Oprah ever again after reading your book.
No.
Never. I know. I mean, I want to call her up now and just scream at her. You know?
I know.
I mean, to put you through that, what a terrible, terrible thing. And, you know, you're such a trooper about everything. How do you do that? I mean, how do you remain such a trooper to this day?
Well, you know, I just figure it's part of life. I mean, everything can't be the way you want it, and everything can't be, you know, every day a blissful day.
Right.
And so, you know, I go along with the flow, and I've always done that, you know. Not to say that I wouldn't get terribly angry if somebody did something that I disapproved of. You know, if I saw somebody trying to hurt an animal, I'd probably go over and push them off the...
Exactly.
You know, so I have that. I remember Marty tells a story. It was Halloween, and we had a huge pumpkin, you know, a balloon pumpkin, but huge, sitting out in our lawn in California, where I live now, in Encino. This was just a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And we went out, and I came back, and I saw these young teenagers, and they had taken the pumpkin. They stole it.
Oh.
And they were carrying it down the... down the street. I said, Marty, that's that pumpkin. He said, oh, let them have it. They're kids. I said, no, stop this car. And it was a young girl, about 16 or something, had the pumpkin. I said, listen, you, who do you think you are? That's my pumpkin. Marty said, are you okay? And I said, yes, I want my pumpkin.
Marty really cares about you. It's so nice to see that. I mean, here's a man who really, I mean, Jack was very self-centered, as you say in the book.
Yeah,
very self-centered.
Yeah.
I can't imagine living with somebody so self-centered. I mean, after a while, I just want to say, you know, it's not all about you. It's about me,
well,
too.
It's true. But he was an actor, you know, and I knew that actor. And I knew, see, the thing is, David, he wanted what I had. I was the breadwinner. I was a movie star. I was, you know, all of those things. And he wanted that more than life itself. And, you know, for me to, you know, we'd go to a party, for example. I'd go and sit in a chair in the corner and let him take over.
Right.
We'd go get off the red carpet or one of those things. I'd go and stay in the ladies' room so he could do what he wanted to do.
Did he constantly make you laugh, Jack?
Yeah. See, he was funny, too. Again, people say, you know... But, you know, when I found out, because I did Oklahoma with Jack, and that's how I met him.
Right.
It was after the movie, and we went to Europe. They sent a company to Europe.
That must have been
Curly.
Fun.
Oh, it was great. But my roommate said, oh, my gosh, Shirley, he's so handsome. And I said, it's before I met him, and she was one of the dancers in the show. I said, I don't like handsome men. They're so selfish and so self-centered. I don't care about handsome. Well, he was that, but what else he had, again, he was funny.
He had some,
made me laugh.
He had something special that you saw, obviously.
That's right, exactly.
And Marty's so much different. And Marty's so much more bombastic. So outgoing. You never know. I'm
you
laughing.
Never know what he's gonna do?
I'm laughing when I read the book. I just laugh thinking of him and thinking how wonderful. And I mean, he doesn't have anything. Does he ever hold back at all?
No. What can I say?
Do you ever hold back today?
No.
I mean, it's so refreshing in a lot of ways. Now, you were almost in Playboy magazine. Is that? Did I read that right?
That's right. Yes, exactly.
did you really want to be in Playboy?
Well, you know, it was an interesting idea. You know, Marty was a producer for a long time too. He produced commercials for movie stars, and you know, this was at a time when agents said, no, we don't want our, you know, movie star doing commercials, you know, and so Marty became the middleman for the product and the star, and got a lot of commercials for people like Orson Welles and Cary Grant and June Allison and, you know, a lot of people. And so he's very good at that. And so he called the Playboy, you know, people and said, listen, why not have an older woman be a centerfold? Why do you have to have these young girls showing their bodies? And they said, and you know, and he said, listen, she's not going to totally undress, but she can do what you know, give you a part of her body anyway. They said, okay.
And you really wanted to do it?
That's how. Yeah, I wanted to do it, but what happened was, and I had all the pictures taken, David. I mean, they had me, you know, laying in the bed with my legs crossed, just showing enough, and then, you know, with the shoulders and the back showing, just showing enough, all that kind of stuff, and you know, the front showing, just showing enough. And what happened, they were beautiful pictures. I mean, the photography there is extraordinary, and the sets and the costumes and everything. But he said, when he saw the pictures, you know, the head of the man, what's his name?
Hugh Hefner.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner. Names leave me these days.
Yeah.
He said, we wanted to show more body. They're beautiful pictures. We want more body.
Somehow I believe that. You know, it sounds like something he would say.
Exactly. And I said, no way. That's it for me.
And that was so it.
That was it, exactly.
So you can't always get what he wants, you know?
Right,
now,
exactly.
You're still working today. You have a couple things in development now, I see.
Oh, yeah. I'm still working all over the place.
What are the things that are coming out?
Well, let's see. I'm Grandma on Raising Hope and Grandma on Good Luck, Charlie.
Oh, and, that's great.
Yeah, and then I'm doing a movie when I get back home right away. It's going to be shown Christmas Eve. It's kind of a religious movie, but a beautiful movie about this woman who was we're on an airplane, and she had been a flight attendant, and now she's retired, you know. And this little girl, her father puts her on the plane. She doesn't want to go, and I said, I'll take care of her. And then we don't get to leave the plane. We have to get off the plane. Something's happened. We're all in the airport. And all the people on the plane have their problems. It's Christmas Eve. That's what you see. You see different elements of people. You know, a marriage problem, two kids who want to steal from everybody, right. And all that kind of stuff. And I'm the one that said, "Let's get a Christmas tree. Let's, you know, it's that kind of story."
Who else is in it with you?
I don't know for sure who they've cast, but I know they have a couple of very well-known people already cast. So.
Oh, interesting. Now, we have to mention the fact that you were almost Carol Brady in the Brady Bunch. How
That's
close
right.
was that?
Well, they asked me to do it, and I said no.
Why did you say no?
Well, first of all, you know, the agents and managers said, "Shirley, don't do a television series, because if you do and it is successful, you'll be that character for the rest of your life and your movie career will be in the toilet."
Wow.
And so that was partly the reason. But the other reason was, if I was going to do a series, I didn't want to be the normal wife, you know, taking the roast out of the oven and that kind of thing. You know, I wanted a part. You know, I love acting. I love acting different roles. That's fun for me.
Right.
You know, different characters. But when Partridge came up, and, you know, I was the first working mother on television, and we were a band, you know. We were a working family. And that was, you know, interesting to me. And I thought, you know what? This I would love to do. Because then the other reason was that I was eager to be able to stay home and raise my kids. They were school age then, you know. And I had taken them all over the world on movie locations with a nanny and the whole thing. And I said, I got to try to stay home and be a mom now, you know, while they're in school.
Right.
And so that gave me that opportunity.
And I think there were like 90-some episodes of Heart to Trauma. I didn't realize there were that many.
But yeah, it was like 4.5 years.
4.5 years.
And that we did.
And that bus, I mean, you can still see the bus in your head. I mean,
I know.
Everybody remembers the bus. You know, it's like you think of the parts, and one of the first things you think of is that bus.
I mean, know.
Your beauty, I mean, these pictures in the book are just magnificent. I mean, they're worth it. The book's worth it just for the pictures alone of you.
Yeah, they're wonderful pictures that they chose. I was real happy.
And
about
the one
that.
Of you and Marty is really wonderful,
too. Yeah, isn't it nice? Yeah, at the end.
I mean,
the cover, I think, is so pretty.
I just am stunned by your beauty. Just all these older pictures now. It's just wonderful now. I'm just looking through them here, and they're just wonderful. I mean, you've had such a wonderful life. I mean,
I have.
What would you like to be known for today? I mean, what you like doing the different acting roles? I mean, is there anything you're dying to do that you haven't done?
Not really. You know, I've thought maybe I'd like to do a play on Broadway, not a musical.
Do you think
a
you
play.
Could do it?
I don't know. That's the point. But the other thing that I am going to do, which, again, I'm not sure I can do, next year is the 50th anniversary of The Music Man.
Oh,
and
wow.
My son Patrick and I have been doing the show, me playing Mrs. Peru and him playing the lead, a lot of places. And we're going to do a concert version of The Music Man. I'm going to talk about the movie, show film clips of the movie, be Mrs. Peru, as well as, and he's going to play the lead, and we'll do, you know, a lot of different scenes from the musical. And the whole thing, and if you probably read it in the book, you know, I was pregnant with him all during the filming.
Oh, yeah, right.
And, you know, I couldn't tell anybody. And on the footbridge scene, he kicked Robert Preston. And Robert pulled back and said, "What the hell is that?" I said, "That's Patrick Cassidy." And so I tell that story. And we did this just last year in Sacramento in their theater in the Round. And I tell the story at the end of the the show, and then we sing "Till There Was You" together, and the audience goes crazy. They cry and they, you know, they just stand up and applaud, and it moves everybody.
You're a very lovable person. I mean, every time I see you, I just feel this instant love for you, and I don't know where it comes from. Just from knowing you over the years on TV, I feel like I know you. Just talking to you now, I feel a little closer to you. Now, have you handled fame well over the years?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, you're talking in the book about your sons having trouble with it. I mean, David became an instant celebrity.
Oh, yeah, David's still having trouble. I mean,
what was that like for him?
I can't worry about him. I know. It just was, you know, he didn't understand what was going on, and the way it happened so quickly and so fast. It was very difficult for David, you know, and has been difficult. And I'm hoping now that he's able to, you know, he's still doing concerts everywhere, but, you know, I worry about him because he still has some problems.
Katie Cassidy, is that his daughter?
That's his daughter. Uh-huh.
I think she was she on that show Harper's Island?
Yes.
I think, I remember, when I read that, I thought, oh my God, I didn't know that was his daughter.
Yeah, that's his daughter, uh-huh.
She's beautiful.
Yeah, she is. She's really beautiful. And he has a lovely son named Bo. He's adorable, lovely guy, and very talented, too.
Now, how many grandchildren do you have?
12.
12 grandchildren?
12, and I'm an only child.
How do you handle them? I mean, do you spoil them rotten?
They're close. I mean, it's great. Sean has 7, but he's had 3 marriages.
7? Wow.
Yeah, 7. Yeah, his oldest daughter, she's my oldest grandchild, 33, and she's a makeup artist, and she does my makeup when I'm out in California. And
all in the family.
Yeah, it really is.
Which is wonderful.
They're just great kids, and he has 4 little ones now. I mean, he's his third wife, but he's extremely happy and has a big new contract at Universal. And
When I read the list of friends that you have, the famous friends, it just blows my mind. You know so many famous people.
Well, I've worked with so many people, you know, so many
How many do you keep in contact with today?
Not a lot. I mean, you know, I'm one of these people, David, that I still have people that I call my sisters, you know, because I don't have any sisters, that I know from third grade. And I have my friend lives in Rochester. I talk to her every day. We were in third grade together. And I have another one that lives in Georgia that I talk to every day. And, you know, so those are my dearest friends. Now, you know, Gordon and Sheila McRae were very, very close.
Yeah, you have a lot of nice things to say about Gordon McRae.
Oh, I love Gordon. And, you know, they were, you know, when Sean was born, they were with me, and we became very close. And Sheila is still alive. Unfortunately, she has dementia. And she's here in New York, in a home. But they were wonderful people. I mean, I adored them. And
yeah, her,
Nelson, I adored.
And Meredith McRae was her daughter, right?
Yes.
Poor
yes.
Meredith. She died very
young. Died young. I know.
What a sweetie she was.
She was adorable.
When I look through the names here, I mean, all those people that you've come in contact with, and you know Florence Henderson to be... I mean,
very well, yeah.
And I tried to get an interview with Florence. They wouldn't let me interview Florence.
They wouldn't? Why?
No, I don't know. Well, she apparently said no, so I don't know. I don't...
Oh.
Maybe she didn't know me well enough. I don't know. You can put a good word in for me next time.
I'm surprised at that, because she...
Yeah, she...
She's very good at that, you know.
Yeah, and she's amazing. I mean, she's another one of those people that you see on TV a lot, and you just instantly love her when you see her, because you can tell she's a rebel herself.
Yes, she is.
So, I know we have to let you go because we're past my 30 minute. It's been such a delight to talk to you. I wish I could talk to you all day.
Well, so are you. You are a delight, too. I thank you. It's wonderful.
And the book, again, is called Shirley Jones.
I'm glad you liked the book.
I love the book. Shirley Jones with Wendy Lee. It's out from Gallery Books. It's in all your bookstores. Thank you so much again.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.
And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.